Are you a 3PL spending more time and money than you'd like recruiting and onboarding logistics roles? Then it's time to check out Rapido Solutions Group, the leaders in nearshore logistics staffing. Located right next door in Mexico, they have access to the freight talent you need. From carrier sales to tracking and tracing and everything in between, they can do the heavy lifting for you. So if you're ready to get your time back and want to move fast, check out Rapido Solutions Group. Visit gorapido.com to get started today. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. This week, we're going to do a deep dive into a newer form of entrepreneurship and supply chain, going really deep into the media side of things with someone who has made the transition from freight brokerage and traveling the world to sharing news and entertainment all throughout the industry. This is the man, the myth, the man behind the memes, maybe. That's your new or old tagline, but Paul Bernard Jaroslawski with Freight Caviar. Paul, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Nate. I'm really amped up. Like right before this phone call or this interview, you asked me my energy levels. And I told you I had one of those liquid IV caffeine ones. I don't know, like, what is it called? Powders?
Energy drinks, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm really amped up right now. So I feel great. Lots of energy.
Well, let's capitalize on that, and we'll channel that energy towards telling the entire Freight Caviar story. So most people that are in the industry know what Freight Caviar has become, and you've got a massive following, and you've built a business around media, but they may not know the very beginnings of how you got started. So can we just go back to maybe that moment when you were making the transition from freight brokerage into goofing off on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, the whole business side of Freight Caviar was very coincidental. It came out of, I guess, I would say people asking me to turn it into a business. That's kind of how I would phrase it. But the whole transition was in 2020. I was the operations manager at Everest Transportation Systems. It's a brokerage that used to be based out of Evanston. I think they just moved offices to Chicago downtown. But back before that, I lived in Chicago. They sent me out to Ukraine. I lived in Ukraine for 3 years running their office, the outsource operation. And then I had left during a pandemic. I left and I was going to start my own brokerage. That was the whole idea, leaving Everest behind to start my own brokerage. And like the first day of being essentially unemployed or kind of being transitioning into starting my own brokerage, I was at the gym. And I remember during those times in the office, we used to always look at these accounts on Instagram. There was Detention Denied, I Hate Freight, and USA Transportation were like these three Instagram accounts that had the funniest videos and memes that everyone could relate to. Because when you're in carrier sales, especially during like the hot market, like of COVID, it was really stressful. There was a lot of, I guess, issues that people had to deal with on a daily basis. And that humor really allowed people just to kind of, you know, laugh it all off a little bit, you know, maybe take it a little bit less seriously, even though it was serious work. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, we're all in this together. We have one life. So, and I was at the gym and I was like, I had this random idea. I'm like, I will create an Instagram account and I will get 10,000 followers in 10 months creating stupid content, like stupid, I would say funny content. But yeah, it was at the beginning, it was really just kind of, that was like, I didn't have any rules. No one knew who I was. I was just like, I'll just start posting whatever I want. And that's this, that was like the transition to the beginnings of what Freight Caviar was. Back then, it was called Shipping Pallets. It was called Shipping Pallets because we had one customer at the new brokerage that I started, and there were these Amish people in Northwestern Ohio that would buy refurbished pallets or buy used pallets, and they would refurbish them. And so I was like, Shipping Pallets. So that was like the beginnings of what Freight Caviar is today.
Was there a point then? So you start creating memes, and it takes a while to build a following. I know from experience, it's not something that happens overnight. Yet there are these moments where something that you share goes viral, and it changes the order of magnitude. Do you remember what the first one or two things were that caught everybody's attention?
Yeah, I do remember there were a few memes. I was like addicted to Instagram back then. It was something that like I opened the brokerage and I would spend like literally the majority of the time just on Instagram. And, you know, like with, I started in October of 2020, and like the first few posts would get like very few likes, probably like maybe 2, 3, 4. And then like in December, I basically like started posting. I posted, I think there was one meme that like had like over 100 likes. And I remember that one did really well. And then like the following week, I posted one with Michael Scott where it got like almost 200 likes. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. Like that dopamine addiction where every notification you get, you're like a like, oh, wow, that's just, you know, amazing. So, but I have to say that I utilized this tactic back then, and I honestly recommend it to anyone that's trying to start a social media following. On Instagram, they have specific rules in place. You cannot follow more than 200 accounts per day within 24 hours, and you cannot unfollow more than 200 accounts each day. But using that, like every day, I would follow 200 accounts that were either following Detention Denied or Ahe Freight, and then I was unfollowing them like a week later or two later. So that tactic allowed me to get into like people would get requests, or they would see like, oh, Freight Caviar, it was back then Shipping Pallets, followed me. And then it would click my profile, see if they want to follow it or not. And they could, it was kind of like guerrilla marketing in a way.
Sure.
And it was time consuming. And I did that for like the first year. I did it every day. So.
And nobody sees the time that you put into that. It looks like an overnight success, but the digital grind is a very real grind. And then at some point it starts to produce something valuable.
Yeah.
So you said people were trying to tell you that this should be a business and you resisted that. What changed your mind?
I wouldn't say I resisted it. I just maybe looked at it a different lens because I was just having fun. I wasn't utilizing Instagram back then, thinking of it, oh, I'm going to grow this following and then I'll have a business. I'll have sponsors. I'll have, you know, everything put together. Like I was just kind of looking at it. I am addicted to social media and I'm having a lot of fun right now. And let's just have fun. I had enough money saved up in my bank account where I didn't have to worry about money. I was literally just like having a good time. It was like middle of pandemic. I just moved from Ukraine to Poland. So I was just like, I was just having a good time. I was also in the middle of opening up a restaurant because I owned a restaurant here in Poland for a little bit over a year. And so like, I was just really, really feeling cozy with the money in the bank account. I didn't have a family or girlfriend. I was just kind of having a good time. I do want to add that one story though. So this is January 2021. So exactly like 3 years ago, I wake up and I get an email from Instagram that my account was deleted. It was deleted. And there was like, I violated some rules against Instagram. And I look at the report and essentially Landstar, like one of the largest transportation companies in the world, like filed a report against me because back then I had in my profile bio that I am Landstar's number one double broker in all of Ukraine. It was just a joke. And a lot of the memes were making fun of Landstar. And because like Landstar has a lot of agencies and, you know, they have like these agencies open up offices overseas and some of them do maybe somewhat, I wouldn't say maybe unethical, but maybe like they're not like the best in terms of service. And they actually, Landstar filed a complaint against Instagram. Instagram deleted my account. And then I followed up with Instagram and they're like, if you want to reinstate your account, you're going to have to go call the lawyers of Landstar and talk to them. So I remember I talked to this guy, Jeff from New York with like a thick New York accent. And I literally just promised him. I'm like, hey, listen, I think his name was Jeff. I will never mention Landstar again. I will make fun of you. I'll delete all the memes. Can you just please reinstate my account? And he emailed Instagram and got my account reinstated. So shout out to Jeff from New York, Landstar lawyer. Great guy.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. Social media is a double-edged sword if ever there was one. You can build a following. You can monetize that 100 different ways. But you're also now in the public arena. And that means sometimes you're going to find yourself in hot water. How do you balance the fun of it in the beginning to now it's a legitimate operating business and you've got a team and you're doing all this work and occasionally you upset people?
We'll be right back.
Have you heard about Bitfreighter and the EDI revolution? Bitfreighter helps companies automate communication with their freight partners through unlimited messaging and quoting. Traditional providers can't say that. The Bitfreighter team is also available 24/7 and responds immediately by phone, email, or yes, even text. Legacy providers can't say that either. So if you want to scale your operations to save time and money, come join the EDI revolution with us. Visit bitfreighter.com to get started today.
Yeah. So you learn a lot. I would say that back then I was like a little child, kind of learning the ropes and like learning how to behave. And also back then when I was like, no one really knew who I was. And it was just kind of like more just like a fun kind of like posting site. There wasn't really a lot of backlash because no one really knew who I was. And then all of a sudden when I went public with it, that's when people like understood, okay, like I'm the one behind it. I'm the one responsible. And since the larger the audience, the more responsibility I have in terms of like actually providing like content that's truthful and not misleading. So I learned a lot. And I would say that it went from being kind of like a really immature account to being more and more mature. But at the same time, it's like trying to be mature, but also like being fun. And I think that's like the best way to actually operate. And it's also, it kind of like shows myself like my, evolution as a human being from kind of being like 3 years ago, I would say like I was a lot goofier, not really serious. And now I'm a lot more of a serious person, and that reflects the brand overall. So there's definitely been a learning curve. I've learned a lot. And I would say that we've definitely matured a lot when it comes to that. And it's like, I try not to upset people. Like that's something that I have in the back of my mind.
It's been fascinating to watch as an observer because I've noticed that change. I recall, I mean, full confession, one of our mutual friends, Danny Frisco with Rapido, who actually is a sponsor of both of our content, said to me, I don't know, a year and a half ago, he's like, Nate, you really got to connect with Paul. You guys have a ton in common. I think you're both great guys. You should find a way to do something together. And I remember saying to him, I don't know, some of the stuff that he puts out doesn't fit my personality. It's not exactly how I would do something. And it wasn't, you know, another full year later that you and I finally met and got to know each other. And I got to see that progression of not only your content changing, but you changing. And it has been a joy to get to know you and hear some of the things that have happened behind the scenes that we can't obviously talk about everything publicly, but it has been rewarding to see somebody go from wielding that influence, sometimes carelessly perhaps, into someone who recognizes that there is a responsibility because of how wide of a reach that you have. And that has to be for you both. You described it as like an accidental, this whole thing is a bit of a random occurrence. And now you find yourself with a following, with sponsors, with a business behind it. And, you know, when you look at the next 3 years, do you have a vision of, as a business owner and a participant in the industry, of where you think you'll be 3 years from now?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely planning and kind of setting out goals to where the company could be. You know, in the meantime of those 3 years, I brought on a co-founder, Christian, and we're also working on an application called Chipper CRM. And so like those are two separate companies, but they go hand in hand because we're utilizing the audience off of Freight Caviar to grow the SaaS business. And I just actually finished reading Traction by Gino Wickman, which is a great book in terms of like getting kind of everyone rowing in the same direction and figuring out where do we want to be in 3 years. And I used to say that we were the Barstool Sports of Freight, but nowadays I say we're the Morning Brew of Freight because I don't really connect that much with Barstool Sports as I do with Morning Brew. Morning Brew is a little bit more mature. Sure. It's more educational. Barstool Sports is a little bit just like really like goofy. And I started taking life a lot more seriously too, just from like personal habits and just changing, evolving as a human being. So that reflection and I would say like looking at Morning Brew and seeing what they've done from just like having a very like a powerful newsletter, but also just great content besides that on social media. I want our brand to be that for freight brokerages. So that's definitely the focus, and really looking at how Morning Brew does it and seeing how we could do it better. So it's really improving on what we have right now and improving on it and creating more of it. So,
well, I want to unpack more of your personal journey then, because you talk about being in Chicago, then you move out to Ukraine, you go through part of the pandemic there, which had to just be its own entire experience. Then you come back and now you're in Poland. Take me through the globetrotting.
Sure. So I was born in Chicago. When I was, I'm going to go all the way back, and then I'll go a little bit faster on some parts. But when I was 10 months old, my mom actually sent me out with my siblings to live with my grandparents in Poland. So I don't remember this, but there's photos of it. Between 10 months old and like 3 and a half, I lived in Poland with my grandparents. And then I went back for preschool to the States, did all of school and college in the United States. But every summer, I would spend the whole summer in Poland. And I used to remember like thinking, wow, it'd be really cool just like to live here. Like, it feels great. I had my grandparents, some family, friends. And so I graduated U of I in 2015. I was thinking about doing a master's in psychology. I graduated with a bachelor's in psychology. And at a career fair, I was just walking around, and all of a sudden my fraternity brother's there, and he's standing behind a company, and it's called Trek Freight Services. And he's like, oh, Paul, you should interview at my dad's company. And I'm like, for sure. Like, I'm all in. Like, anyone that will hire a psych major, like, I'm in. And I just wanted a job at this point, because I felt like, okay, like, I could go get a master's, but I would spend a lot more, you know, get student loans out. Not really sure yet exactly what I want to do. So I got the job at Trek Freight Services in Lincolnwood, Illinois, which was a great training program. I did training for like half a year, and then half a year I brokered freight. But it was really stressful, and it was just like, I ended up leaving after a year, and I was thinking, okay, I have some money saved up, I'm going to go travel the world. And then I was thinking I'll do my master's in psychology. But then I traveled the world for 6 months. I came back home broke. I had like literally $30 in my bank account. And I'm like, all right, I should probably go get a job first before I go do my master's. So I had this girl that I worked with at Trek. She was now a recruiter at CS Recruiting. So she was working at Charlie Safro's recruiting company, and I reached out to her because she always was messaging me, telling me that if I need a job in logistics, she could hook me up. So she ended up getting me 4 interviews in 1 week, which was like, okay, I was like, this is great. I got 4 job offers, and then like it was between 2 companies. It was between Everest and K&L Freight Management, and Everest ended up offering a better salary, like just kind of like small startup. K&L was more corporate, so I was like, I'll go with Everest. I went to Everest in January of 2017, and they already had like 2 people working like remotely from Ukraine. And like, there was always this conversation that like, Paul, we'll send you out to Ukraine. We want you to build up an office out there for us. And I was like, that's amazing. That's like right next to Poland. I could go visit like Poland every weekend if I wanted to. And so when they offered it like 10 months later, if I wanted to move to Poland, I was like, to Ukraine. I was like, yes, I want to move to Ukraine. So in November of 2017, I was 24. I packed everything up. I went from living with my parents in a small like condo in Des Plaines to like living like a king in Ukraine overnight. It was like unbelievable. And then I ended up moving to Ukraine in November 2017 and staying there for 3 years, built up a brokerage team that was all just outsourced team working on the US market. It was all legit company. And we were there. I was there for 3 years. And then during the pandemic, we went all remote for a little bit. And I was just started thinking, okay, what's next? Like, I'm already like a little bit tired of like just brokering freight. But at the same time, like, I also want to be an owner. I want to be an entrepreneur. Like, it's time to, this is like the best time to go on my own, because I don't have a family. I don't have kids. Like, worst case, if everything fails, I could still go get a job somewhere else. And I also wanted to move to Poland. So, and then in November of 2020, a month after starting the Instagram account for shipping pallets that I later renamed to Freight Caviar, I had moved to Poland, and I have been here ever since.
And what is it like? Because now you spend a ton of time with your grandparents. You've shared a little bit about what your family dynamics are like, and that you're, you know, 20 years ago, it was your grandparents taking care of you. Yeah. And now those roles have reversed somewhat.
Yeah, they have definitely reversed. I'm here taking care of my grandparents. I feel like it's like an obligation, but like an obligation that I'm happily fulfilling, because I get to spend more time with them. And, you know, you never really know how long they'll be around for. As we all know, we're all going to die one day, and they're already aging. And it's like, there's always that wisdom you could learn from them. When I talk to them, like, it's, they have, like, my grandpa was born in 1937. So he was born 2 years before the war. He remembers the war.
Wow.
Like, yeah, like he tells me like the memories he had from the war, because he was 8 years old when the war ended, World War II. And my grandma was born in the middle of the war. So like, there's a lot of, I guess, a lot of things that I want to, like, I could get from them, from like just like wisdom wise, but also just being able to spend time with them and helping them out. I know that that gives them more life. It gives them more, you know, they're more, I don't know, happy, fulfilled. They love it when I come over, because both of their daughters are in America. So my mom and my aunt are both in America. And so they don't really have anyone that's really close that could like help them out. So now they have me.
Well, it's a full circle, literal around the world journey that you've been on. And it says a lot about you that you're willing to do that. And I know that now you're building a team out in Poland to support Freight Caviar and the other products that you're building. How do you think about the future of, I mean, maybe it's too early to say legacy or anything along those lines, but as you've matured and as you take a maybe a decades long view at life, which is what it sounds like you're doing, what kind of difference do you want to make, or what's the deeper why behind what you do?
I love this question, Nate. And I have to say that it's been evolving ever since I became an entrepreneur, because right from the get-go when I started, I was like, oh, I just want to make a lot of money and cash out and like live like a life on the beach, probably just chilling. And then like, it's been like, honestly, this whole journey of being an entrepreneur has been more of a spiritual journey than anything else.
Sure.
It's really changed me as a person, but just right now, it's all about leaving like a legacy and like creating impact. And I've heard, I forgot which entrepreneur I was talking to, but he had everything set. Like, he didn't have to work anymore, but he was just like, it's all about like creating an impact. Mm-hmm. And then when I met with Ted Alling in Chattanooga in November, and he showed us the Chattanooga prep school, what he's working on. And like I was like, wow, like he's changing the lives of like 500 kids and like the whole generation of like, you know, their whole families too. He's changing. He's creating this really positive impact. And I was like, that's what I want, mm-hmm. you know? And it's something that I've like, money is definitely not the priority right now for me. Like, obviously money is necessary. Yeah. And the more money I have, the more positive things I could do for the world. But I'm not really materialistic. I honestly like I'll probably like have a Toyota, like even if I'm a millionaire, or when I'm a millionaire, like I'll still drive a Toyota. Like that, the car doesn't matter for me. But like being able to change someone's life, like for me is like, wow, that's like crazy, like powerful. And so like when you get like I realize obviously with the audience, and there comes responsibility. With power comes responsibility. And having an audience, you have power.
You do.
It's like when you have money, you also have power. So it's like, but how do you utilize that to like good? So I would say that I'm definitely like, I went from just like, okay, making a lot of money and cashing out to like, okay, well, first of all, let's create like really good products for our customers and like for our audience that they'll enjoy. At the end of the day, like if you're a media company and you're not creating quality content for your audience, you're not a media company really. Because mm-hmm. I mean, no one's going to be paying attention to you. So it's, and the same thing goes with Shipper CRM. It's like creating like the best product we could and focusing on the quality. And it's something that I feel like, yeah, I really want to focus on the quality. And then once the money's made, to make a big impact on the world. I'm not exactly sure where that will go, mm-hmm. but I definitely want to like help those that are less fortunate, and really like leave behind when I'm like, you know, dying, I'd think like, wow, like I did like a lot of good for this world. Mm-hmm. Because every single one of us has the ability and the power to do a lot of good, you know? So
I think people get wrapped up in what the thing is that they should do to provide value or to do good for the world. And maybe it is, you know, cancer research, or they're trying to do something to right a wrong in the world that they see. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very noble. And what I've landed on for myself is the thing, like doing logistics isn't exactly the, I mean, sometimes it is life-saving if it's medical supplies or something along those lines. But I think the best way that I can do good in the world is to do what I've been asked to do at a very high level. And that excellence by itself is somewhat of a calling. And participating in the economy in whatever way that you do, or participating in maybe it's education or politics or whatever else it is, simply doing it with integrity at a very high level displaces the bad actors. It makes it hard for them to compete. It makes it harder for them to make money and stay in business. And so sometimes just doing, maybe you're an artist. The best thing you can do for the world is to do your art so well and with all of your energy and talent and passion in a way that shines a light somehow and makes it harder for the bad people to do that thing. And it's maybe it feels less flashy, mm-hmm. but it's so, to me, it's so durable because I can keep doing that thing for 50 more years because yeah. it's what I already love to do. And it's a quiet way of making an impact that I've latched onto in the last couple of years. If I don't have to, there's no grand vision. I just want to do what I do really, really well and trust that that will have a positive impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Well, let's go then to back to the media side for a little bit. It's 2024. Independent media is growing seemingly by the week. There are new shows being created. There is new podcasts happening all the time. And some people might say that the market is getting crowded. I disagree. I think everybody should have a podcast that has a unique point of view. Choose your niche, whatever that is, and share whatever stories matter to you. But I know eventually, you know, there are only so many eyeballs in the industry. Do you look at how big can this get, or are we at a limit, or do we need to pivot? How do you look at the media market?
We're definitely not at a limit. There's always room for quality content. And I think with more creators, the quality will just increase. There's more competitiveness. I would kind of like say the golden years of starting a freight brokerage was probably like the 1980s, 1990s.
Yeah.
Where a few people kind of knew, you know, this new industry and like were able to get into it. And that's where American Backhaulers, sorry. American Backhaulers came out, Access America as well. But there's right now, I feel like we're kind of like there was a golden age opportunity that maybe like probably lasted like up until like last year or something. Cause then I feel like there's like, maybe we're still in the golden age opportunity. It's hard to tell, but I think that we're going to get more creators joining us and that that's going to cause more competitiveness potentially in terms of like the overall market, but it's also going to push quality up because you're gonna have more content. So you're going to be able to get like the viewers going to be more picky with what they're viewing. So if anything, I see it as a good thing because it's going to improve quality. And as long as you're focused on quality, you're good. But if you're just focused on, you know, just maybe you, I don't know, aren't focused on it, on the quality aspect, just churning, you know, I don't know, getting as much content out there as possible, I think that might hurt you, might impact you a little bit. But overall, I think it's a good thing for the industry.
So what advice would you have? Because it does feel a little bit like the golden age right now still for content creators. Mm-hmm. And eventually that sub-industry will go through the cycles that all industries go through. There'll be consolidation. There will be new methods of distribution that are invented that make some of this obsolete, and that's just life. Mm-hmm. But what advice would you have to somebody who is really early in their influencer journey or social media journey that you wish you had had in the beginning?
So I would definitely be focused on what you enjoy doing. Don't do something because don't do something if it feels like a chore, you know, like really like doing it. Like what I love doing a newsletter, like that's, and like posting content, like that's fun for me. And if you have that same kind of passion for it, find out exactly which content it is. Like I prefer the newsletter over almost any form of content.
Interesting.
And I love getting emails on my newsletter. That's like when I, nowadays, like I actually have all my notifications for social media turned off. I turn them all off. And even for me to get into social media, I have this app called ClearSpace, which is a great app if you're looking to limit your social media time, and it locks the app. I have to go in, like do like this breathing exercise before it unlocks it for like 5 minutes. And the only notifications that are really like, I don't know, my dopamine levels really go up is when I get a notification that someone subscribed to my newsletter. So, because I get an email every time someone subscribes to my newsletter, and I just smile every time I get that. And so like that's where I want to be creating content in. And I feel like, especially in the beginning, you can't be in all places. You know, it's like, where do you specialize in? Especially as more creators join, like overall the market, You're going to want to be more specific to what are you known for. You don't want to be generic. You want to be like the person for this. Like Nate, you're the guy for Bootstrap Founders. Like everyone knows that. Like if you want to listen to Bootstrap Founders, listen to Nate's podcast. Like for me, I want to be known as like the newsletter guy. Like sure, I have memes. I mean, I have funny memes, but everything leads to the newsletter. Like everything that I do on the internet, I want you to subscribe to our newsletter because that's what I want. And I love getting emails because you're not like you're what is it called? You're not forced into like you these algorithms on social media where, you know, they'll dictate if your content goes viral or not. Mm-hmm. You can't be spammy on email because there's still email filters that will block you for being spammy. But overall, like right now we have 8,500 subscribers. We'll have almost 4,000 people reading every newsletter because we have an open rate of about 45%. Like that to me is like, wow, that's cool. Like almost 4,000 people Monday, Wednesday, Friday read the Freight Caviar newsletter. And I'm like, wow,
that's
like
a small no town. One sees that's an entire town of people reading.
Yeah. Like no one sees that maybe on like LinkedIn because it doesn't have 4,000 likes. But there's still people reading, and if they're reading it, that means they're enjoying it because they probably wouldn't have read it if they didn't enjoy it.
Well, if people have stuck with us this long, I want to do one last deep dive then on business models. One day, this is foreshadowing everybody, we're going to actually do a book called The Bootstrapper's Guide to Logistics, and it's going to be an actual guidebook on every form of business model in the industry, how you can make money as an entrepreneur, and all the pitfalls and tips and tricks for each of them. If you know freight brokerage, you're going to buy something at one price and you're going to sell it at a higher price if you do it well. I mean, that's freight brokerage. There's a lot more to it, but that's the underlying model, is buy low, sell high. The media business is so misunderstood by most folks. And so let's have a short masterclass on how to make money in media. And if you don't mind, you're the expert in this, but I'm going to give a little a blueprint to it and see if you agree with it. There's sort of a four-step plan of how you can do this. Step one is to build a personal brand, become known for something. And then through that brand, build an audience. Once you have an audience, you can build a product. And then once you have a product, you can add services. That's a very concise way of saying, how do you get people's attention, get them interested in something, find out what their pain points are, solve for those pain points through products and services, and then the entire table is tilted towards you. It's tilted in your favor. That's my most abbreviated version of turning media, starting with media and turning it into multiple revenue streams. So first, how do you react to that? And then how would you describe the blueprint?
I love it. And I love media because once you have an audience, anything is possible. Because that's what you need to start a business, to have a business, to sell. You need an audience. You need people that are looking at you, are maybe, you know, interested in what you're selling. So what's really amazing is if you build an audience, like that's literally like the most important, I would say, aspect of selling, because everyone tends to go this way. Like they'll create a service or a product and then they'll go try to create an audience.
Yes.
But what if you first create an audience? Cause then you don't know where you might not even know what you want to sell yet. And I would want to add that in the first step, Nate, you said that to build a personal brand, I would say it could be a personal brand or a company brand. I did it mostly through Freight Caviar. So Freight, I guess like the personal brand came out of Freight Caviar for me. It wasn't first personal brand. So I would say like, even if you want to have like your own company, maybe like, or like the Morning Brew or I don't know, Barstool Sports, there's a lot of brands that you could create that could also be known. And then your personal brand could be followed or you could create it afterwards. But if you create an audience, you're like reverse engineering, like just creating a company.
Yes.
Which will give you a lot of advantages when you go actually launch. So, yes.
And the beautiful part of, thanks for sharing that. The beautiful part of this is there's a playbook that's been established and you can watch it in real time to see if it works or not. I mean, FreightWaves as an organization has set the tone for this model, and we've all benefited from getting to watch their Craig's progress of starting a media company. And then Sonar was created after that. And then there's events and there's conferences and there's all these different revenue streams that come along with having an audience. And your earlier point though, is you have to start with something that you love. If you can't, so I always ask people, what could you talk about for 4 hours? If I gave you a microphone, no preparation, what could you, and for some people it would be quilting. Start a quilting podcast, build an audience around that. Maybe it's pets. I have no idea what it is, but if you follow that thing that you could talk about for free for hours, you won't run out of enthusiasm. If you're just doing it for the money, when the money's not there, you'll lose interest. And building a media supported business is a long-term game. You're doing that daily grind behind the scenes. Saturday, I mean, I know you. You and I talk. Saturday mornings, you're working. Friday nights, you're working. Every evening, I mean, you're traveling around the world. You're doing conferences. It's not an 8 to 5. You have to do things that will never get attention. And you're planting seeds for things that will grow eventually. And in order to do that, you have to love it.
Yeah, 100%. So like you mentioned that, you know, I work on Saturdays. We all work on maybe Saturdays and like it's not a 9 to 5, but it's like, it's not. Cause like I work, I mean, whatever about my phone, I'm doing something like that's work related. I'm sending a Slack message. I'm emailing someone. And, but at the same time, I love it. Like it's like such a game. It's like a fun game. It's like, it's the most exciting game in the world. And there's ups and downs 100%. Like there's days where I'm like, wow, this is like tough, or, well, you know, maybe something happened and I'm down. But then like overall, it's the best game in the world. It's like you're playing, like for me, like at the current moment, I wouldn't be able to go and work for someone because I'm like unemployable. I feel like I can't imagine like building someone else's like dream. Like I would rather probably sell everything I own and like live like basically, I don't know, at my friend's apartment on the floor just to maintain everything and not like go work for someone. And I would still love it because I'd be like, I still work for myself. I'm creating something. And that's like, honestly, like the most satisfying, fulfilling thing in the world.
Why change? You found the path that you're supposed to be on. Let's ask, end then with a final question. I like to ask a lot of entrepreneurs. You didn't get here on your own. You're not going to get wherever you're going next on your own. So as you look back at where you've been so far, who would you like to say thanks to or express some gratitude for their support on your journey?
I love this. So Ryan Rogers from Textlocate was the first DM we got from like a legitimate sponsor. This was back in August 2021. He literally just had launched Textlocate, and he had DM'd us on Instagram to see if we could like promote him. And it was funny. I was like, Ryan, I'm not going to charge you right now, but in return, could you just like mentor me a little bit and like kind of help me how I could actually turn this into like more of like a viable business. And so like we got on some calls, and like Ryan was telling me, like, he basically was like, Paul, you could build this out. You could, you know, you could have more sponsors. Like, I'm your first sponsor, but you could get a lot more sponsors. You know, you could literally monetize this. And he kind of sparked that idea in me. And then like a few months later, I got Ascend TMS to be a sponsor. So shout out to Tim Hyam. And Tim's actually an investor in our application called Chipper CRM. So those are definitely two people that have helped me a lot along this journey of like Freight Caviar. And then like Danny came from Rapido. So I would say like those are definitely like three people that like helped me like really believed in me and believed in the product of like the, like I guess the media side of things to actually, you know, like pay for sponsorships and like, you know, like believe that we are worthy of a sponsorship. So I would say those three people I definitely want to shout out to as helping me along the way.
What stands out to me is all three of them are supply chain entrepreneurs. And I rarely make a full pitch on anything, but behind the scenes right now, there's a group of supply chain entrepreneurs who are getting together every month and actually helping each other. And they're supporting each other's businesses, giving them answers to the problems that they were stuck on that somebody else is now stuck on. And like if you're a $5 million freight brokerage and someone else is at $50 million, they've solved for those problems that it took to scale and hire and build cash reserves to be able to support growth without taking on investment, for example. And the best, in my opinion, the best support for founders is other founders. And so we actually have a group that is private, and it's a membership, and it's growing month after month. We've been doing it for a couple of years now, very, very privately, and we're only now beginning to talk about it. And it's called Ballast. So if you want to check it out, you can go visit joinballast.com, and you can see what some of the entrepreneurs in the industry are doing and getting together and helping propel each other's growth, because there's supply chain entrepreneurship is so hard. It's the hardest industry in the world, in my opinion. Certainly the biggest, but you don't have to do it alone. And Paul, your story is a great example that there are a multitude of ways to be an entrepreneur in this industry. And if you surround yourself with like-minded people that can guide and mentor and help you along the way, not only is it delivering better business results, it's also just a lot of fun. It's fun to be around other people like that, isn't it?
100%. If you're an ambitious person, you need to surround yourself with ambitious people. And that's why I love Ballast, because you're literally in a room full of logistics founders. And like, if you need help, guidance, if you even want to just share what you're going through, it's the best place to actually, you know, be around like-minded people. Cause like when I spend time with my family, like they're not in logistics, they're not founders. It's like, it's difficult sometimes to like make a connection, even like with friends. But here it's like, we're all like in this together. Let's help each other out. And yeah, if you're a founder and an ambitious person, you want to surround yourself with ambitious people. So that's why I love being in Ballast.
Well, that's a resounding endorsement. Thank you so much, Paul. We wish you just tons of success in 2024. Let's stay close, stay connected. And I'm just now beginning to do Where Are They Now updates from founders in the first season. And so let's put on the calendar for January of 2025 to reconnect and see what 12 months of Freight Caviar and Shipper CRM has turned into. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we're all rooting for you.
Thank you, Nate. I really appreciate that.